This is URN.
Hello and welcome to Nerd of Mouth, the weekly show where we talk about all things nerdy. We're going to be with you for the next half an hour, and we're produced and presented by me, Philippa. I use she, her pronouns, and this week my nerdy thing I've been up to is I've been diving back into YA fiction, and I read The Mortal Instruments City of Bones, which was interesting. I'm not sure I necessarily liked it, but it certainly was a ride. We're also joined by...
Hello, my name is Jamie. I use he, him pronouns, and what I've been doing recently is rereading the back catalogue of Terry Pratchett, which is a long back catalogue. He is a very prolific writer.
My name is Athena. I use she, her pronouns, and my nerdy thing this week has been that I've played two new games, new to me at least, the first being Graveyard Keeper, and the second being Foundation, and I have found the latter to be exceptionally good, especially as a big fan of city builder games, and highly recommend it if anyone's thinking about it.
Nice. I've heard of Graveyard Hunter, but I haven't played it myself yet.
I've heard of Mortal Instruments. Is that the one that revolves around incest for the first three books and then takes a break from it for a bit, and then in the fifth book reintroduces an incest element just to be sure?
Yes, but it wasn't revealed that it was going to be that until quite near the end, although I had heard that that was the case. But I only bought it for £2.99 at the discount bookshop, so I think it was worth it for the entertainment value, if not the literary prowess of it. Anyway, so this week we're going to be talking about D&D, Dungeons and Dragons, role-playing games. You know, what are our favourite characters, what are our favourite monsters? I don't think we're necessarily going to agree, so hopefully we can have a little bit of a debate about what we think is interesting. Obviously, a reminder, these are all our own opinions. If you absolutely love a particular class or race of character, you know, that is up to you. This is just what we like. So... let's get started. What are peeps' favourite monsters in D&D? Any particular favourites you've encountered or have DM'd?
I have a bit of a story that goes with this, actually, if we've got sort of the time for that. There's a bit of a fabled D&D story called the Gazebo Story, where effectively what happened is, a DM is taking their players through a thing, and he says on the offhand... and as you walk through the park, you see a gazebo and some benches and some chairs. And the first person goes, no, hang on, what's this gazebo? And the DM says, it's a gazebo. And he goes, I draw my sword. It's sort of a... because he doesn't know what a gazebo is. I can see it's a word that some people just breeze their whole lives through without knowing. That's perfectly fine, because it's a very weird word. But absolutely, a gazebo does sound like a monster. And as a result of that, there's been in a campaign I've played, we've walked past a gazebo, and we had to go through the gazebo to get somewhere. And then it turns out the gazebo is a monster. And our DM had a little gazebo thing made up. I think it's a 3D printed thing that someone else had come up with. So it looks like a gazebo, but with lots of little tentacles and teeth in the middle of it. And I think that's one of my favourite experiences of playing D&D, is just walking through a gazebo and it turning out to have tentacles.
I love it.
So my experience with D&D is more within DMing. I have played as a player, but DMing is kind of where my expertise is. So when I think about my favourite monsters, I think from a DM's perspective, one of them, I'm very partial to the owlbear because it's just great. I love owls.
We're all partial to the owlbear.
But from a design aspect, I find two monsters extremely interesting. The first being the mimic. Now, for those who aren't familiar with what mimics are, they do what the name says. They can basically mimic an item and will sit there for days on end and waiting for someone to stumble upon them. I personally ran my campaign recently. We had a chest of loot that looked, kind of promising at the bottom of a lake. And I enticed my player characters to swim on down and investigate. And of course, if you're unfamiliar, mimics have an ability to stick people to the themselves. And I had a player drown.
Oh, no.
So that's one of an idea as it was. But I like using mimics to kind of play against people who are finding themselves a little too cocky. Like, so if you've got a player character...
Can I ask a question? As a DM, is it something that's inherently sadistic? Do you take pleasure in killing characters, or is it just something that happens quite by accident, because a lot of this is down to random chance.
I'll be 100% honest, it was completely unintentional, but we have a half-orc barbarian who has an intelligence score of 5, which, for again, for those who aren't familiar, is extremely dumb. I think a giant squid has an intelligence of 6. So he decided to cause some issues that caused the other players to die. So no, I don't personally like having that, and I don't let them permadie usually. I was reading online on Reddit about someone who explained their favorite mimic story, and they said they had a character who was extremely afraid of mimics and would kind of check everything for that. And they were in a library, and they saw a bookshelf with only one book on top, and it said, "How to Spot a Mimic." So the guy ran up and climbed it and grabbed the book, and of course the book itself was a mimic.
No.
So my second one of my favorite creatures is the Kuotoa. So again, for those who aren't familiar, these are inspired by Lovecraft's Shadow over Innsmouth, which these are like...
Oh, the fishmen.
Yes. So if you've ever played World of Warcraft, Murlocs are probably a good example, but they are these humanoid little creatures with a giant fish head, and they're actually, you know, they don't look as menacing as they, I think, Lovecraft intended. But in the player's handbook, it says that they invent their own gods, the very definition of insanity. But they're able to manifest these gods through just sheer power of will. So there's a YouTuber named Z Bradshaw, and he was talking about Kuotoa and the different things you could do with this, and this idea of Kuotoa who maybe die by a player character, and then that player becomes a manifestation of a god, or if you throw a rock at it, this rock god, and the more you kill, the more powerful these gods become. So I think it's a really interesting character for anyone who's kind of looking for something different to play around with.
And it might be a fun thing for a DM to play with as well, like creating a weird hamburger god or something. Oh, yeah, that's interesting. I like that.
It's a monster that's a way into other monsters, in effect.
I like, so talking of mimics, I like the Kenku, which are the bird people who can, they can understand common and like bird language, but they can only speak through mimicking other sounds that they've heard, which I think is really cool. So like, I think the example of it is that if they're trying to buy something, they make the sound of jangling coins, or, you know, if they, I don't know, if they want an apple, they make the sound of the, of someone biting an apple or something. I just think that's really cool. And like, also, as a like on the DM side, a really cool way to sort of play tricks on people by having like, oh, you hear the strange sound, do you go and investigate? And things like that. So I like the Kenku a lot.
Yeah, I think it was Critical Role, which is a campaign, for those who aren't familiar with it. It was a campaign run by a bunch of voice actors. And in their most recent campaign, they had a Kenku named Kiri. And it was the most adorable thing. And it was just only 4 years old, so it was only learning to mimic things. And
oh, that's so cute.
And because the DM was a voice actor as well, he was able to mimic all the voices of the player characters, so he would use different snippets of what they would say to then kind of form sentences and stuff like that.
Very nice.
Speaking also of, so we were saying about sometimes making sort of homebrewed monsters, I quite like comedy campaigns. I quite like very silly stuff. And so I think it was... Pinterest is surprisingly a brilliant place to find D&D resources. So I was looking through for some interesting stuff. And someone has, of course, made a goose. A horrible goose from Untitled Goose Game is now a D&D character monster you can play.
Brilliant.
Which I think it can bite and honk. Which is great. And then also I saw another one which was actual cannibal Shia LaBeouf, which then someone then played and described somewhere on Tumblr of his characters running in terror as Shia LaBeouf pursues them through the forest, which I just love that. I love the creativity that goes into the homebrew characters as well. Yeah, I think those are really great.
Yeah, I'm really partial to anything homebrew. I like using D&D Wiki and stuff like that just to find ideas. Homebrew, again, for those who might not be familiar, is these things that are created not necessarily in the official texts, but these are created by players and usually are balanced to the best of ability. But you can find some really interesting stuff in there, and I've extremely enjoyed going through all of that, especially with monsters if they don't have a list of stats and stuff like that.
I think homebrewing is really important, otherwise it can sometimes just feel like a manner of just walking around, encounter a monster, fight the monster, carry on, and repeat, really. I think when you have more of a monster you've made yourself, you have more of a sense of where they fit in with regards to everything else, rather than just thinking, that's a cool monster, I will inflict this on my players in a way.
I mean, I got into D&D through someone who'd made their own campaign. And so when I started, I kind of assumed everyone would make their own campaign. But then more recently, I've been playing more sort of one-off, one-shots, so a single, you know, single one session. And actually, I've been really liking, both for myself when I DM, but also when someone else DMs, having a set story we can follow, and it makes it a lot faster to get going, which I think is quite nice. And I think Homebrews, again, does allow more variety with that, and you can bring in slightly different elements, or, you know, go outside the canon, as you were saying, Athena.
Yeah, for me, I have created both the campaigns that I've run were completely different worlds that I ran myself and created myself and all of that. But, and I do find that you're right, it's kind of hard to get going sometimes. But, you know, once you start going, you get all these ideas, and the player characters offer some really interesting ideas, and you kind of just want to roll with them. You kind of want to just play around with that and see where those can go. And, you know, it's kind of like pulling a string and seeing where it goes. But, you know, there are some interesting things that play into it, because I've made decisions in the past regarding the number of gods and all of that. And I'm like, well, you know what, it might be nice to add, you know, this god or that god. And so kind of playing with that idea, but using homebrew and trying to find their own ways to kind of incorporate those people in.
So speaking of player characters, so we've sort of talked about some of our favorite monsters. So the more juicy question, what are some of our favourite like character races and classes that we like to play? So races like dwarf, elf, human, orc, etc., etc. Classes, something like, are you a bard, are you a barbarian, are you a cleric, etc., etc. So does anyone want to start?
I will start. I have always played, whenever I've played in D&D campaign, I have always played a druid. Always and always, always will forever. It's the class I play in World of Warcraft, and I absolutely love druidism and the nature aspect and the animalistic aspect of all of that. But I am also partial to kind of the more magical classes, such as the warlock or the wizard and the sorcerer. I find the sorcerer's wild magic table extremely interesting. And for people who have kind of played a lot of D&D, that can offer kind of a new element to that. But druid definitely holds it for me, and I've begun to consider, after seeing that stat block for the goose, to terrorize people in wild form as a goose.
Yes! Amazing. I love it.
Is wild magic the same as chaos magic? Because I've seen some players have huge successes with that, just doing some big thing and then just rolling a weird number, because you use a sort of a 10 dice and a 10 dice, don't you? A d10. And then generally what happens after you use a chaos magic, which is a very big spell, something bad then rebounds on you. And what's happened a lot with that is I think they turned into a llama, and we had some fun sort of shaving rude words into their fur for a bit.
So wild magic works.
I think it's similar.
It's very similar. Every time you try to cast a spell, there's a percentage chance that your magic will go wild. And this can be based on various different things. Maybe, you know, how intelligent you are with certain things, or a curse. And there's a table of 100 different options of what can happen. And, you know, this can be anything from just, oh, you know, nothing happens, or, you know, you produce an anti-magic shield. So there's a really good story from a YouTuber called Dingo Doodles, and she talks about her campaign where she plays a wild magic monkey-like creature, and they were doing karaoke. And in part of that karaoke, he wanted to put a little bit of sparkle into the air. And, you know, as he casts this, of course, it goes wild, and he produces an anti-magic shield about 7 miles wide, and the DM had placed a Tarrasque underneath the city, which, for those who don't know, is one of the most powerful monsters in the game.
Oh.
So she absolutely ruined the campaign by just her thing going wild.
I've been playing a rogue recently, which is fun. It's a fun character. You get to steal from people a bit, you get to swindle a bit. I think that character's been trying to sell a religion to people where they're sort of the messiah, so that's been quite nice. But the problem with rogues is I don't mind that they don't get to do magic, because I always find magic a bit sort of pernickety, and I prefer just to sort of work things through, just in terms of improvising and through words. But the main problem with rogues, I find, and it makes the game very exciting, but I am very frequently in very much fear of death, just because they do not have the the health necessary for these things. I almost died at my first monster encounter with a sort of an origami monster, and I had a poison tip thing, and that sort of laid me down. I failed to make two saving throws when on zero HP.
Which is then a bit tricky if you don't have magic, so you can't step back either.
Oh yeah.
Do you mostly go with like dagger, or do you?
It's mostly dagger. It's all sneak attack really with rogues. It's you stab and then you hope that you get some extra stabbing involved really, which makes combat rounds a bit of a bore. But it's honestly it's worth it for the sort of the chaotic neutral element really. Though having said that, I think it's always good to have a lawful good character in there. I think campaigns without a lawful good or a neutral good character tend to get distracted, which is a lot of fun, but it can mean that quite a lot of time at the end of the session you've got nothing to show for it.
So yeah, I think with alignment it can be pretty important for keeping the campaign on track. So I ran a one-shot recently and I said to my characters, my players, you can be any character you like, but please make yourself a good or a neutral character, just because we don't have the time to have someone doing something completely different. We need a slight railroad, but not too much of a railroad. You know, we need to keep you on track to get it done in the time we have. So I do think alignment can be quite useful there. For me, I think my favourite class to play is definitely Bard, which I only discovered recently. But I like playing bards who are a bit stupid, more stupid than me, who will immediately go and touch the thing they're not supposed to touch and then try and like con their way out of whatever it is, usually reasonably successfully, and play some sort of instrument or do a rap or a spoken word speech to inspire everyone. And I like bards a lot because of that.
I think bards are definitely increased by the player's ability to improv and the ability to create these kind of one-liners and these songs to kind of cheer on the group. We had a bard in our group who recently left, but when he was there, he had a pan flute, and a lot of the time he was playing Sandstorm, you know, Darude Sandstorm, but you know, he had some good stuff like this is a pirate themed campaign, so of course he played My Heart Will Go On.
Brilliant.
Yes, of course. You know, you bring up a good point with alignments. I think for the player who may be new, alignments can be really helpful because it kind of helps decide your character decisions. And for someone who kind of wants more of a challenge, such as the cleric in my campaign right now, you can have those alignments changed from various different, you know, forms or, you know, influences. So currently the cleric, and I don't want to spoil it for the rest of the player characters who I know listen to this, but he's undergoing some sort of external influence who is maybe affecting his decisions. Ooh. And therefore his alignment, and creating a very unique aspect. So when the players kind of see this very noble and very, you know, priest-like figure all of a sudden going crazy and just murdering people, like, either their first thought is, oh, well, that's weird. Or they think, oh, what's happening?
And what's happened to them? Yeah.
So I think it can play into some really interesting aspects. Mm.
Do you like choosing a background or for your character? So, for example, there's like charlatan, acolyte, those things. So it's like, what's happened to your character before? Or do you kind of go off-piste and just make up your own?
So it's kind of a mixture for me. To be honest, I really enjoy the homebrew backgrounds because I think there's more options and stuff like that. For my player characters, I encourage them, because it's a lot of them their first campaign, to kind of choose one from the book. But for me, I've joined a campaign recently, and I kind of just thought up the backstory and then just tried to find one that fit that character and worked from there.
Yeah, I think when I was starting, it was really helpful to have the backgrounds. And I still really like having the like the positive, the negative, the bond. So, for example, the character I'm playing at the moment, Tiffany Whispers, a bard. She's a charlatan. And she, like, her... she has, like, her flaw is that she's got this link to her person in her past who's, like, trying to find her, and, like, she doesn't know who it is and stuff. And I think having stuff like that kind of gives you sort of little mantras to keep in your head and helps you with the characterization and the role play a bit more. So if you like doing a lot of role play, I think they're really, really great.
I definitely agree.
Keeps character.
I So the campaign that I'm joining, there was kind of one shots that happened before in the same universe, so the two other players have already experienced this universe, so I'm kind of having to jump in. And using the background, I was able to kind of find a way that my character fit into all of that and fit into all of the kind of what has already happened and stuff like that. So I think it can be really helpful. It can also create some really interesting instances down the line, I think, for people to, you know, for the DM to work with. So as a DM, I really enjoy kind of taking those backgrounds and working with them. So it's a pirate-themed campaign for the one I'm running, and there was a big pirate city and all of that. So, of course, the people who were pirates would have been here before, and they would have had familiar things. So it's kind of fun to work with and kind of design these little encounters, and they don't have to be anything big, but it makes the players, I think, feel more involved, and it makes their character development seem a little bit stronger. And I really try to focus on that when I'm designing encounters and stuff like that, is, you know, am I developing any player characters right now to help them kind of develop their story, or are they just one-dimensional?
Yeah, and getting everyone actually invested and engaged in the game, I think that definitely helps when you actually like your character and you know who your character actually is, rather than just sort of... I do like it sometimes if someone assigns you a character, but it then takes a while for you to kind of get used to what they're like. Do you find you normally play characters that are similar to yourself, or do you like to kind of branch out? Personally, I like to play a character that has an element of myself, but then is not entirely like me.
So the first character I ever played was definitely a way of an outlet. And I do this with a lot of role-playing games, whether it be video games or whether it be, you know, D&D or anything like that. I create kind of these extensions to myself, especially before I came out as trans. This was a big kind of outlet for me to use these games and to kind of create, I'm just playing a female character just because, you know, that was kind of my excuse. But so I did feel like I was just kind of playing to someone who I wanted to be and stuff like that. But my most recent character, she is unique, and I think she will be different enough for me to try to explore some new topics with. And I think this comes with time. So if you're new to playing D&D, don't feel like you have to go out and try to, you know, make someone who's exactly unlike you. Having someone who likes you can really help you make decisions, I think, at times. And if you think, okay, well, this is what I would do in this situation, so my character might be very similar. But that's just my philosophy on it.
Yeah, I think over time I've branched out more and more away from myself. So yeah, my first character even had, like, so I'm Philippa, my character was Penelope. You know, she was the exact same. Like, she liked cats, I like cats, she's an artist, I like art, you know. It was just the same. And then actually during the same campaign, we got given a secondary character because sometimes people couldn't make every single week, so we had two kind of plots going on at the same time, and I played Ursula, who was not D&D actually, this was playing a Cthulhu sort of game, like the Laundry Files. So we were playing as, like, Ursula was this mid-level accountant who was trying to get into demon slaying and who was sort of like a bodybuilder in her spare time, and it was brilliant. But I actually really appreciated my Dungeon Master GM for giving me that second character to make me think, like, oh, actually I could play people outside of myself. So, and then ever since then it has definitely branched out more and more, I think. And now I just play a load of bards.
So as a totally nonchalant segue, how often do you work on the name and create a character around it?
So I love making names, one thing I've been doing is, with Tiffany Whispers came fully formed to me from the bandit name generator from the D&D names generating website. And I was just like plopping in suggestions on the bandit names, and Tiffany Whispers was there. And then I was like, oh, I've got a player. It's brilliant. And I think I did a similar thing with my previous bard, Tristan Redmond Courtenay, who was a pirate, and then he turned into a bard.
I find myself, when I'm trying to find names and stuff like that, either I'll use a generator like that, or because my family's Greek, I like to use kind of Greek-based names, and I'll try to find, like, a word that I feel matches, and then I'll go from there. So I played a druid in WoW for a long time, and I used the Greek word for dog, Skylos, so his name was Skylos.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I like to do that a lot, and I continue to do that in my campaigns. But I think you had a little idea of a quick game.
Yes, so based on my own experiences, hopefully I can find the bandit name generator. Woo! So what I thought we could do is have a little go and see if we can think of what sort of character these names evoke. So for the last 5 minutes while you're with us, we're just going to play a little game. So I'll give you a name and then we'll see what we reckon. So Crackpot Fielding.
Well, I think this is like a gnomish or like a halfling, maybe even a goblin if your DM lets you do that. I think someone who's exceptionally crazy. I think the name is definitely not...
Definitely chaotic, obviously.
I don't think the name was birth given.
No, no.
I don't think that, yeah. But I would think something kind of like roguish or...
Fielding could be sort of martial though as well. So like maybe they were a military man in their past and they were Captain Fielding.
Or like a rogue soldier.
Yes, then they ran away and they've become a rogue. And now they're Crackpot Fielding.
Yeah, you could multi-class that. That'd be really interesting.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, let's get another one.
Nice, nice. Okay. This one's brilliant. Hulk the Weasel.
Hulk the Weasel.
Sorry, I think, Marvel.
I think Hulk would have to be his birth name. And the weasel obviously is given.
Mm. So perhaps he's like a Goliath or half-orc.
Yeah,
Hulk,
maybe.
He's hulking.
Maybe he's like a big Goliath type or half-orc. But he's a druid, and he loves nature, and he's just the sweetest person.
He has a pet weasel that hides in his backpack and comes out and bites people.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
He has a pack of weasels he sends after people.
Yeah, so maybe he's a ranger, Beastmaster.
Ooh,
ranger,
yes.
With a weasel.
Yes, but, I love it.
All right, let's see what else we've got here.
Okay, let's do a lady. Mad Dog Sheila.
Oh, goodness. That's definitely like... artificial or like a gunslinger if you have that in your campaign.
Ooh, yes.
Mad Dog Sheila. That would, you know, this is off of D&D, but like a cowboy themed thing, you know.
Ooh, yes.
I get like an idea of like...
Yeah, we don't have to stick to D&D. We can go into other role-playing games.
But I definitely think that she would be one of those like cowgirl, don't give a damn, like...
I mean, my name's Mad Dog Sheila.
I can't hear Mad Dog and not think of the U.S. General. So it's
you stole my cow. Prepare to die.
Oh God, that'd be good. Yeah.
Yes, she can shoot a ruffian from 100 yards. I don't know how far away is good if you're shooting a gun.
100 yards might be a little short, but
500 yards.
Maybe.
1,000, yeah.
Yeah, depends on the gun, I suppose.
Okay, let's...
Just one final one?
One final one. Blossom the Outlaw.
Blossom the Outlaw. Okay, it's a feminine name, I think, with outlaw.
Maybe she's an elf.
Ooh, yeah, maybe...
Blossom.
Yeah, maybe she's going against the elvish army, and maybe I'm thinking like a Robin Hood type.
Yes.
And maybe I'm a little bit biased here thinking about Nottingham. But I think, you know, Blossom, maybe she's like a multi-class, like rogue, ranger, druid.
Ooh.
And she's kind of a wood elf type, stays down to the floor, she's kind of all kitted out with,
yes,
like elvish clothing and all of that.
Pink hair, for sure.
Pink hair, certainly.
She like scatters petals, but they're poisoned petals.
Yeah, like she'll act all innocent and go up to a guard, throw some petals,
yes,
and then just...
Thorn whip him into oblivion, yes.
Yes, oh.
I love Blossom.
I have a good story about Thorn Whip, but I think that's for another time.
Yeah, I think I might use Blossom sometime in the future.
I think it'd be a good little gnome name as well.
Oh, yeah, like she's squirreled away. And
or halfling, yeah.
And it's Blossom. Oh, yeah, halfling, that would be really good, yeah.
Yeah,
definitely. And then she's left the halflings to go on an adventure. Okay. And I think with that we'll draw to a close. I hope everyone's enjoyed listening to our episode about D&D. We might talk about it a bit more in the future. But for now, you've been listening to Nerd of Mouth, and we'll be back here same time next week.